This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 5. Who is David Mongoose? Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, a typing error in the show notes leads to a whole new character on the show. Maybe he'll recur in a later show. But we also talk about some cricket. MCC are trialling red cards. We find out about a braced front leg while you're batting. And we talk about problems between senior players and coaches and how to deal with those. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is a frolic through the meadow of cricket coaching and playing cricket in the sunshine and lots of fun. And joining me for the aforementioned frolic are two cricket coaches, the first of which is the director of coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
Hello, how are you? Right?
I'm good. I'm always trying to come up with new ways of saying hello on the show.
The same thing, yeah. Introducing the same dull bloke sitting in his office at Millfield. I love it.
Yeah. I'm supposed to say, hello, here's Garris.
Yeah. Well, Garris has had an interesting week, actually, this week. I've been lucky enough to be... I did a presentation down to a group of coaches down in Sussex, their Coaches Association, which was a brilliant day, and I thank them for all of their hospitality, and hopefully they took a couple of takeaways. And then I've had the great privilege and honour of joint presenting the ECB Level 4 Master Coach Biomechanics module, which was... A real challenge to me, because I'll be brutally honest with you, it's not an area of absolute specialism, but worked alongside a lady called Debbie Cox at the University of Gloucester, who is brilliant in biomechanics, and we tried to bring it to life for a number of coaches, which include the ex-England international Craig White, Nick Poffis from Hampshire and now Leicester was in there, Richard Pyra from Yorkshire, who's just got the new franchise job with the one of the women's franchises over here.
It just sounds like you're in a room with a load of my mates.
I know, it's brilliant and it's fantastic, and now I'm sitting in a nightclub at Millfield, so we're loving it. I can assure you that the drink in front of me is water and not Jägermeister though, so that's good. Actually, I tell a lie, I've just found a bottle of Magners underneath my feet.
That party behind you is getting more and more exciting.
Oh, God, yeah. You all want to be here, though. That's why I'm getting that sense from you two. Yeah. I've got Dan dancing in his chair next to me as well. It's fantastic.
Lavers, sorry, I should introduce you properly. The cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School, Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
I hadn't realised we hadn't already done the introduction. I thought we were just cracking on.
Yeah, you have been involved in netball this morning.
I have, just a little bit of work with some of the first team netball girls. We've got a national semi-final match coming up today, and I spend a bit of time with them every now and then, which is quite good. We just talk a little bit about how they're preparing, and then just help them out with a little bit of their shooting work, where they're just really getting on with it, and I'm there just to be someone to talk to, really. So nothing more than that, not really providing any expertise in terms of netball, but just there as someone who they can ask questions of, who isn't the coach that they're with all the time. So usually just a person to vent frustration towards, which I'm happy to take.
Yeah, well, we've talked about that before, haven't we? How it's, the job of a coach isn't just having, great technical knowledge and being able to make technical corrections. It's a lot more than that. And in fact, as you're showing there, you don't need to have very much technical knowledge at all to coach somebody.
Yeah, it's not really anything to do with the netball. You're just helping them get ready and making sure that they're happy with what they're doing, just in the same way that you might do with a batter who's getting ready to go out and bat, or a bowler who's preparing on the day. You just take the cricket conversation out of it, but there's still plenty left over to include in your discussion.
But let's have some cricket chat, because one of the things that's come up this week is a proposal by the MCC to make a change to the laws of the cricket by trialling essentially red cards and sin bins. So we're a little bit thin on details at the moment, but I thought it'd be interesting to get your opinions on what that means for the game and whether it's going to be a good idea.
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. I think any of us know, do we, whether that's going to work or not. I think it works in a sport like rugby, for example, where very much the umpire is, or the referee in rugby's case, but the official is very much deemed in a very respectful way, isn't it, by all of the players, and can penalise people, not just in terms of cards, which is, I suppose, the ultimate sanction, but also in, for example, turning a penalty from one side to the other, depending on what's happened. And often that happens when there's a bit of mouth or a bit of lip or disrespect going towards the official. And also, you know, 10 yards being given as well as another penalty. So I think it will work in that context. I don't know how it's going to work in cricket. The thing that I would do is to put the onus on the captain, actually, rather than to put the onus on the umpire so much. And maybe the penalty should go against the captain if there is any bad behaviour that deems a sin bin or a sending off, rather than necessarily deeming the player. There always needs to be a chain of command, doesn't there, within any team. And one of the captain's roles, particularly in cricket, is to, yes, be tactical and whatever, but it's to motivate and control and manage the players on the pitch, probably more so than in most games, because of the time element and the amount of time that the ball isn't actually physically in play is so significant. So I think if I was to do that with a sin binning thing, then it would be the captain who would be important in that process. And similarly to rugby, it's often the captain that gets spoken to instill discipline within their team rather than the individual who may be of misdemeanor. So that would be my slant on it.
Cricket is unique, Laves, isn't it, in that it's not really had that disciplinary system in place before. I know there's been penalty runs brought in relatively recent times, but how often do you see penalty runs? So is there a place for that kind of football, rugby style discipline within the game of cricket?
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a place for it or not, but there's definitely a place to trial it.
Mm.
So I think it'd be really interesting to see how it pans out. And I think it has been something that people have talked about a little bit over the years, and whether or not it's something that's been taken massively seriously or people have kind of suggested it tongue-in-cheek a little bit. It's something that looks like it's going to happen. MCC have got some guidelines out for what their trial sanctions are going to be. So they're obviously suggesting level 1 to level 4 offences, and they've got some suggested sanctions for them as well, which look quite interesting. So I'm quite keen to see how it goes, and if nothing more, it might get us to a situation where we think at least we know it doesn't work, rather than wondering and being in a what if situation. So I think it's worth going through. I'm quite interested to see how it goes, because a lot of it seems, so level 4 offences seem to be geared towards violence or intimidation, threatening behaviour, disparaging behaviour, etc. And the suggested sanctions are removal of play, and if they refuse to go, discussion with captain, where if they don't remove themselves from the field, the game will be conceded.
It is quite a extreme measure, isn't it? The game hasn't taken those measures before. Do we think it's because of the game, there is more dissent in the game and there is more aggression in the game and less respect, and captains don't run the game as well as they used to? Or is it just that we're more aware of it?
I think it's a combination of the two. I think that's a good question, David. But again, I think I'm a bit sheltered to this, I'll be honest with you, because I've been involved in test cricket and international cricket quite a lot, where you don't get it purely because of the microphones and the scrutiny that obviously the game is under, and the amount of people that are watching it. I think probably the biggest place is the club grounds, isn't it, around the various countries where this thing, obviously people are taking it incredibly serious. It's their highlight of their week and all of that. But we see more instances of significant misdemeanour in that context than we do in the professional game. We see a little bit in first-class cricket, but most of the time that happens again when the cameras aren't there. So it's more mitigating some criteria and some guidelines and some regulations that will support the lower levels of a game. And ultimately, I think that's for the lower levels of a game to sort out a little bit. And the captain is the best person on the pitch to be able to deal with that. And yeah, I'd put more onus on the captains, I'll be honest.
Yeah. I think one of the discussion points that will come up is that if people are willing to hand over more responsibility to umpires, then they'll probably want to see more in return in terms of their own development and willingness to accept responsibility as well, because there will be instances where mistakes are made from players who say the wrong thing, but equally there'll be mistakes from umpires who make the wrong call, and they've got to realise that increasing responsibility they're having and possibly the professionalism that they show within the amateur game might have to be upped a little bit with more training and more consultation as a kind of team with players as well, away from the match situation.
And I think with that, you know, if you're asking umpires to take on more responsibility, more training, get more support, you're falling into that realm of umpires needing to be remunerated more significantly. You know, it's exactly the same as the Premier League challenges on that. And of course, there's a limitation to funding. So, yeah, I think it needs to be done very carefully, mate. That's why I would put it more in the captain's court than I would put it all onto the umpire, because I don't think it's sustainable in terms of the funding around the world, and also the sort of CPD, the continued support that you'd have to put around these people that are officiating our games of cricket.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with a yes-no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the question, so let's fire away. First question, performance is a byproduct of purpose.
Yes.
No.
Second question, it's better to bowl in overs at nets.
Yes.
Third question, many classical aspiring batsmen get stuck blocking and are frustrated into swinging desperately.
No.
Yes.
Now, this is the part of the show where we answer listeners' questions or questions that have been sent in using the Pitch Vision website or pitchvision.com. And what we do is we answer a couple of questions and then we choose the best question of the week that wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. The first person who sent in their question is Varun. And Varun says, some batters have a braced front leg, something that you've recommended to pace bowlers and spinners to do to get more pace. Does the same principle apply when it comes to hitting? If yes, should we alter the way batting is conventionally taught? That is to say, with a bent front knee for front foot shots and vice versa.
Okay, well, my kind of outlook on this is that we first of all look at the reason why we want that braced front leg. And so we're looking to transfer energy from that run up into our and through our body, through that kinetic chain, and subsequently have that being transferred into a ball. And I can see exactly where he's coming from, because he's thinking, if I have a braced front leg, presumably there's more power coming out of the hands and the bat. In contrast, though, the movement of one step isn't necessarily going to be as big a contributing factor to generating power out of the hands and the bat as a run-up from a fast bowler would be. And so I wouldn't say that it's going to be something that's going to be a necessity. Equally, there might also be technical... I mean, it might be a benefit. So there could be a very small benefit to it, but I don't think there's going to be enough transfer of energy from one step up the kinetic chain from a straight front leg. Equally, there are going to be a few areas that could technically take people away from the ball a little bit further, which for certain people might see as a disadvantage. So I'm not saying no for everyone, but the benefits to a batter probably aren't quite going to be the same as you get from a fast bowler, in my opinion.
There is a case, of course, of power hitting, isn't there, Gareth, where you are looking to get into that more powerful sort of baseball hitting position.
Yeah, definitely. And that is related to transfer momentum and accelerating the speed that goes up through the body from large muscle groups to the smaller ones being, you know, the forearms and hands primarily when we're trying to hit the ball hard. And there is a definite positive effect from having a brace front leg in this context. And we're seeing it more and more within the game now. You look at the best power hitters in the world, and particularly off of low full tosses, particularly off of length balls and even back of a length balls now, the best in the world are displaying that very common shape, which is very transferable across from baseball. On that front leg and also on the back leg as well. So having a look at having a bit more of a bend in the back leg and a straight front leg. So there's a definite benefit. We know that that's the case. That's why when people throw and when people bowl fast and bowl spin, they're looking to try and get into that pit, that placement of their front leg. Exactly the same principle, because transfer momentum is transferable across every discipline that we do. You know, but contextually, there is also some times where we do have a straight front leg, and the example being a different front foot drive, accessing a different type of ball and hitting it to a different place on the pitch. So if you can imagine facing a bowler who's bowled a middle stump half volley or reaches you at middle stump, then often and pretty much all the time, you will see that people will stride into that using a straighter front leg and less knee bend in that joint when they play the straight drive, whereas when the ball goes into an off drive and in certainly into a cover drive, then there'll be more flexion in that front knee. And that's again something that's consistent across all batting. So to say that we bend our front knee into every single drive as a coach would be really bordering upon dogma, I would suggest. And actually, when we really slow things down and we look across very large numbers of batters, both at the international game and through down into people that are novices, you'll see that the straighter the ball, the less knee flexion you will present at point of contact. The wider the ball, the more knee flexion you will present at point of contact. So bear that in mind as well when you're coaching technically as well as just power hitting.
Would you say then, because from the question of should this be conventionally taught, are we still saying, because in my opinion it is yes and no, so it's something that we should have up our sleeve, but it's not something that we should necessarily impose on people all the way through their what they're doing?
I would say that your starting point is what we've taught, which is to bend. You know, that's your starting point, but then you introduce context, don't you? And you say, however, yeah, we do know, and it's proven, and there's some fantastic documentation out there. If you want to, anybody who's really interested in looking at some articles and research papers which have been published on this, Penn and Spratford is the one that I would go to that looks at batting mechanics from a biomechanical perspective. Stick that in there, and you'll see that there's different knee types for the different types of drive shops, and it's a fascinating article if you're into that sort of thing. If you're not, then you can choose to take my word for it or ignore it. It's up to you, but that's what has been found. So be flexible around it. Different lines of ball require different knee types. And if we become a slave to only having one, then obviously we're going to be doing a disservice to our cricketers. In terms of power hitting, you know, you can't go too much further than looking at baseball, seeing how now the best players in the world are adopting that across, and seeing the front leg classification, which sits around producing ultimate power. And there's some unbelievable stuff going around the world at the moment. There was a shot from Steve Smith the other day against India up at Canberra, which is worth a look at, because they slow it down and they put some, they do the negative rather than the normal picture, which shows it fantastically. MS Dhoni is a magnificent exponent of it, as too is Andre Russell and various others. Glenn Maxwell, fantastic. Look at some of their sixes and you'll see what's going on there. And it's, you know, again, that is a tool that you use in context.
When it comes back to teaching kids, beginners who are learning to play those shots, we sort of move beyond lining everybody up and getting them to do exactly the same thing all the time. And it's more about seeing what they do when you tell them to try and hit the ball in a certain area and then work from there, right? I mean, you can, there's a difference between something that works that doesn't look orthodox and a difference and something which is the players getting it wrong and it doesn't look orthodox. You know, they're not hitting the ball well, or they're hitting the ball in the air, or they're doing something that they don't want to do.
Yeah, so you're coaching the intention there, aren't you? Which is what we've talked about a lot on this show. And it's been great. I can't speak for other people's coach education systems, but certainly there's been an evolution within our coach education system, not just at the top where we talk about action types quite predominantly, but also where we go into the level ones and twos. There's less rigidity, I suppose, over what we do with a front foot drive now, and it's more about, here's the outcome, here's a full length ball, there's some target areas, organise yourselves to do it. And what you'll see, because biomechanics is biomechanics, is that when even a novice, if you give them a basic demonstration, give them an intention, they will start to move in a way which does conform to a lot of the basic biomechanical rules that we've got now. And the on drive, when you're playing a straighter one, there will be less knee bend. So if we as a group of coaches then turn around and say, no, the objective is to play with a bent front leg, then we'll be going against those those principles. And it might be that we put people off in terms of their experience of hitting that straight drive, because they could be quite happy doing it their own way with a straighter leg. So, and I know that that's happened in the past, because I'm sure that I've done it to many cricketers over the time, trying to get them to hit a 80 mile an hour straight half volley with a bent leg. I probably did that numerous times, and I apologise to Joss Butler and his mates that I did that.
Lucky he ignored you, Gareth.
Yeah, exactly. That's the art of being a great cricketer, isn't it?
Because the argument the other way goes, that if you know the answer, if you're the coach and you know the answer, then you tell the player how to do it, and then they try and do it, and then they do it, and they've got the answer. But that, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, there's always going to be more value in learning things in different ways. And if you're just given every answer in the world, which ultimately, you've got the internet in front of you, so you've got a lot of them there, doesn't mean you remember them all, does it? So it's how that learning experience is carried out and how that is then retained by an individual.
Okay, thanks, Varun. That was good. I enjoyed that one. Okay, next question is from Sanjay. And Sanjay says, how important is the relationship between senior players and coach? What do you suggest if the coach is not getting on with the captain and the vice captain, and they're not willing to take advice and they simply run their own show? This is a very common problem I come across. And I know Sanjay is in Australia, and it sounds like he might be speaking from experience there, but whether he is or he isn't, how do we solve this sticky coach and senior player relationship problem?
It does sound from experience, and I'd be interested to see whether that experience has come from his experience of being a leader within the team, or whether it being a leader from the sidelines. That would be my first point to him in a one-to-one conversation. But more broadly, the first starting point to me is sitting down and working out whose role is what and whose responsibility is what. And at the start of every coaching season, I'll do that with my assistant coaches and my captain as well. So we get a good idea of who does what and where one line goes into another and how to work together and all of that sort of thing. Because often it's not something that's discussed. And as a result, people try and fill a void or a perceived void, and sometimes they tread on people's toes, or the messages get mixed, or whatever the case may be. And then it ends up being a situation like this, where you get to a point where you've got to do some real sort of redeeming work, I suppose. And that's always quite hard work. I always find that a bit of time at the outset to get all of that stuff set up is absolutely fantastic. And I think, you know, looking at international cricket at the moment, it was obvious that whilst Trevor Bayliss came into the England setup quite short notice, that a lot of preparation work was done between himself, Paul Farbrace, who'd worked with him previously a lot, and Alistair Cook, about who was doing what. And there's no doubt that Alistair Cook, from a test perspective, leads the test team, and Owen Morgan, from a one-day perspective, leads the one-day and the T20 teams. And they're very much at the forefront of everything. But they've worked on their relationships and what the roles and responsibilities are for each of those captains with each of those formats, and how they're going to work with the coaching staff. So that's the starting point. And often when you get beyond that and you work around those sort of frameworks that you put in place, then you find that there are less problems, and you certainly don't get to this stage where they're not getting on and they're ignoring, because that's a byproduct of a lack of structure, I suppose, within the organisation and in the relationships between key people.
So, Lavis, what if someone is in this situation already? They haven't taken that opportunity and now they feel stuck in, I'm trying to help, but all that's happening is none of the players are listening to me and I've been sidelined completely. What can I do to get out of it?
Yeah, well, I think let's go back and have a chat with that senior player or that captain or that maybe leadership group that you've got in place, and voice your opinion and say, look, this is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to help in these areas. Where do they feel that my help is going to be most beneficial? Or from the other direction, you could say, this is where I'm going to help. This is where I'd like you to be committing your time. So again, just reassessing the boundaries, reassessing who's in charge of what, or who's focused in what areas, so they know exactly what is expected of you and you know what's expected of them. It can obviously be quite difficult when you get mid-season and it's a bit messy and things are already going on and maybe there's some success or there's some failure. However, communication should be an ongoing thing, so it's not necessarily something that we set out at the start of the year and then we pick it up again in 9 or 10 months' time. It's something that's a fluid thing and it's going to be changing all the time. There's going to be opportunities to review things and adjust whose roles are what. But as long as everyone's communicating with each other, then that should work fairly well. And one of the big things it seems here is that whichever position Sanjay is in as senior player or as coach or whatever it may be, it sounds like he's communicating with us probably a bit more than he's communicating with those players or that coach. Sit down and have a chat, which has been an answer to a few questions over the years.
I think one of the key things, David, is that you do that sit down and then you tell the other person how it feels. Not what you think, because that's an opinion, but how it feels. And often people will then empathise with that because, we can all associate with feelings. We've all been on the wrong side of, or what we felt was a poor side of a relationship. And we've probably been the perpetrator within that as well, without necessarily intending to be that person. So talk about feelings is a crucial one. Be really, really open. Try and keep it non-emotional to a point, you know, where you can have a normal conversation. But say, well, actually, when you do this, it makes me feel like that. And when I do this, it makes you feel like this. This is what I perceive. Is that right? And they might go, well, actually, no, this is what happens. And then all of a sudden, you've got awareness. And once you've got awareness of how somebody else feels and they've got awareness of what you're going through, then you've got a great starting point for a remedy.
I like that. It's right. No one can argue with you about how you feel.
Correct.
Whereas if you say this is happening, someone can always say, actually, no, it's not. I don't believe that's happening at all. So
yeah,
it's
absolutely. Yeah. I've only ever been told once what I was thinking. And Andy Flower told me what I was thinking once, and I told him that he was in no position to tell me what I was thinking. The slightly annoying thing was he was right. He actually told me exactly what I was thinking, which probably tells you something about how brilliant he is. But generally you've got to talk about your feelings because people will tap into those because everybody has them.
Yeah. And there's also, I guess, a political element to it as well, in that there's things going on around that relationship as well, isn't there? You know, a coach may be appointed without consideration of the senior players, and then the senior players don't like that, the fact that a coach has been appointed at all, and all they want from the coach is someone to run the warm-up before the game and then get out of the way because we're trying to play cricket. And when that political element comes in, that adds a level of difficulty and complexity too, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think we've probably all been there, haven't we? That certainly sounds familiar from my standpoint in a couple of teams, that is for sure. And again, you know, good coaches are the ones that will have a good idea of why they've been brought in and what their purpose is. I think when we see things go wrong and it go wrong virtually from straight away and that synergy not being had, it's often because the coach is misinformed about the environment that they're going into. So the real clever coaches are the ones that, even if they've been given a brief, they will then consult and they'll get a feel for it before they do anything. And I think that was one of the strengths, again, of Bayliss, even though his first series was an Ashes series, which is obviously really important. It was very evident that he had a watching brief before he started to make some proper interventions. And it's probably only now that we're beginning to really hear about the more overt things that he focuses on as a coach, which one of which is definitely around catching. You know, that's come out strongly over the last little bit of time. But initially, he took a watching brief and made sure that he positioned himself perfectly within the environment. We've got a very, very special soapbox today. I'm looking forward to this one. It's gonna titillate and stimulate me. So I'm looking forward to hearing what David's got to say this week.
I want to talk about the Mongoose cricket bat, that little cricket bat that is half the size of a normal cricket bat that was popular a couple of years back, but seems to fade away a little bit now. But we've got a couple of them knocking around at our club. And so just as an experiment a couple of weeks ago, we tried to do some nicking practice with one, and it turned out, possibly because the handle is so huge, it's a lot easier to nick the ball with a mongoose when you're trying to deliberately do it. So we started doing a lot more nicking practice off the back of that. And that got me thinking further about being creative and trying to think of things, constantly trying to think of things that aren't necessarily going together. But when you try it, it turns out it works pretty well. And if you go into your coaching, your playing with that kind of a mindset, you'll find that you'll be a lot more creative and a lot more things will open out in front of you if you're just open to trying lots of different things, failing a few times, but you'll have some great successes as well. And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. There's one more thing we have to do before we leave, and that is to decide on the winner of this week's competition. Of course, we had two lovely questions, one from Varun about a brace front leg for batsmen, and one from Sanjay about the relationship between senior players and the coach. So Gareth, which one did you prefer this week?
I'm going to go for Varun's. I think it's a fantastic question, particularly relevant in the game now because we're seeing more evidence of power hitting, but also relevant because just to broaden people's awareness around the function of the front knee in different types of straight drives. So great question, Varun, and congratulations.
Well done to you. And if someone was listening to the show and they were thinking they wanted their question answered and maybe win that prize, that online coaching course, how can they get in touch with us, Gareth?
They can give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can also find us on social media. Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy and Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. You can listen to the show every week by subscribing for free. Just go to your favourite podcasting app, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and click on the subscribe button. You'll get that every Friday when it comes out. And if you want to catch up on the show notes or stream it via the web, you can go to our website, pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link there for all the fun. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, guys.